And welcome back to the program. You're listening to Sacred Space here on CJUM 101.5 FM out of Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada. And we're sitting here talking with Michael Tazarian right now about psychic vampirism. And before we left for break, Michael, I wanted to ask you about, now that we know a little bit about the psychic vampire, how do we protect against him?
Well, you know, it's like in any kind of any kind of disease situation or any kind of toxic situation, even if it be just a mere problem with cleanliness in the home or, you know, any kind of clutter, because that's what this psychic vampirism is, basically. It's an assault on your sovereignty. First of all, it's reason. It's an education into the subject, a simple understanding that the phenomena exist, and then from there you move. The key way to really discover it, if it is happening in your life, you see, or you suspect it's happening to you, is to basically be very observant of your own energy fluctuation. And, you know, I go into this in greater length in the DVD that's going to be coming out, but again, it's all about a knowledge of the self. I think you mentioned this earlier. Nothing happens in this universe for no reason. Everything that happens to a man, including some of the worst things that can happen, you know, like having to spend time in jail or whatever, there's, you know, you may curse it, you may hate it, all these adversarial and sometimes even preposterously, seemingly meaningless things that happen to us, all of the domestic minutiae that just absorbs all of our energy. So, you know, if you look at life, it just seems that there is so much chaotic stuff that, you know, one has to handle in just the course of one life. And basically, people can start getting into pessimism and think, you know, it's just too crazy, it's too much, I don't understand it. What we got to realize is that there's a meaning and a reason for everything that happens. So even in the case of, you know, when you've suffered enormous violence in, say, a family situation or domestic abuse, or that you've, you know, suffered prejudice outside in the world, or whatever scenario that has caused you pain and caused you suffering, it is for a reason. And one of the biggest reasons is because it's turning a man in to find out who he is. All of the different adversarial things that have happened in the world, including psychic vampirism, because, again, psychic vampirism is just another kind of violence. It all boils down to different forms of violation on the person. And the world is full of this kind of thing, and we also do it in our own actions. So it's all about trying to, it's basically about the absence of self, that the people of the world have not been addressing who and what they really are. And you can't blame a lot of them because, you see, we're conditioned from day one. If you take a beautiful stallion, you know, but you have, with a whip, and in a closed, fenced environment, you train that animal every hour, on the hour, you know, day after day, week after week, you know, it's going to perform. Mm-hmm. Even the wisest of animals, like the elephant, which is, you know, known as the wisest of all animals, even the lion, which is the most ferocious of all animals, will do your silly damn tricks for you if it's trained, you know, long enough. And the human being is no different. So from the point go, from the, you know, intervention of parents who don't know what's going on, all the way up to the schools and then, you know, further on and through the media, human beings are just pulled, literally taken away and pulled away from their own inner voice, pulled away from their own inner center. And they're living on the periphery of being. And that's a very dangerous place to be, because if you're out of touch with your own sovereignty, if you're out of touch with your own inner voice, then you are open to all the parasitical energies, you know, and all the vampiristic energies that may exist of people who are even further from the light than you are. Then it becomes a vicious circle, because this kind of phenomena does not happen unless there is a violation somewhere. Psychic vampirism, like any kind of violence, is a violation of truth. It happens, it occurs, because people are living in absence of moral virtue or, you know, of truth.
Yeah.
And until the world returns to a virtuous state, you know, and I, you know, it's not doing that. So you're going to have these kinds of parasitical type of action. And as I said, we all have it to a degree. But, you know, you may borrow somebody's energy or take somebody's energy, and it's such a small amount that it's not really missed. And then the chi, you know, builds up again quite quickly. Or we might meet somebody that's a bit of a, you know, a pain, but they're not necessarily a vampire, you know, like, but we got to maybe do a couple of things for them. And it kind of, you know, takes our energy down. You'll have a lot of that happen in life. But it doesn't mean that that person is a conscious violator of your energy. It doesn't mean that that person has murdered themselves. It doesn't mean that that person is, you know, very, very far away from the truth and the light, and that they're living, they want you to fulfill their existence. So that it's very different each case. But the remedy is to use your reason, know that the subject is out there, and then start to be able to monitor your own energy levels emotionally, so that you're walking down the street and you feel good, you feel all right, you know, there's nothing troubling you, you seem to be in an equanimous state. You meet this individual, you talk for about 15 minutes, and then you leave, and then suddenly you find that your emotions are in a terrible state. Most people don't connect the dots. They don't connect the fact that, wait a minute, was it to do with that person and their energy? Because we are trained to blame ourselves. It's a form of self-sadism. We are taught only to look to our own, you know, sort of inner mind and the kind of mood swings that we normally have. And we don't necessarily note the fluctuations of our energy based upon, you know, and the reason why is because we trust the mask. Yeah. We go by the mask, and everyone is good at playing the mask. So you meet somebody, and just because they're smiling, and just because they're happy to see you, and because they're, you know, throwing back at us the platitudes, we might not notice what our emotional body is saying. But see, our emotional body is very intelligent, and our subconscious mind is very intelligent, and it knows when it's being, you know, when energy is being stolen. So one of the things we need to do is to sort of think about where we are in our minds, and what's our natural state? Who are we, you know, naturally? And then once we really have an understanding of that frequency, and we really have a printout of who we are normally just left to our own devices, it becomes a little easier to notice when the needle is swinging, you know, and we can judge what is the influence of other people. But this ultimately means a return to selfhood, because we have been dragged so far away from our own inner, you know, sort of center, from this magnetic north of our own being, that we couldn't even tell if you paid us $1 million what our own energy is, because we don't have our own energy.
Yeah, we deny it.
Yeah, and we, you know, something, George, it's worse than that. People don't even have their own energy. They live so much with other people. They live for other people, this martyr, the whole martyr problem, where you're always immersed in the life of other people. You're surrounded by other people. You care, you know, far, far too much for the welfare of other people. You're totally involved in their lifestyles, and you allow them to be overly, you know, involved in yours, because you have no center. You have no sense of self. So people are running around, you know, not just on the weekends when it's kind of obvious to see, but all day long, every day, they're just absolutely open, wide open. You know, it's like the boundaries are down, and everyone is just a flux. This is also what you have with the consensus trance on an intellectual level. And then Carl Jung, you know, talked about the collective unconscious, that even people are just programmed, you know, they have no sense of individuality or uniqueness or selfhood. And therefore, you are then perfect prey to the vampire who knows how to work you, because you have already got three-quarters of the social conditioning is a perfect setup.
You've already done all the work for him.
You've done the work for them. You have a beautiful mansion. Something created, and it's precious, and it's pristine. But, you know, the doors are wide open for every derelict to come in and just, you know, make himself happy.
Yeah.
And then you're wondering what the stink is in your life.
Now,
so my work is basically to address the fact that, which, you know, is that psychologists are unable to cure a lot of their patients. You know, patients are spending tons and tons of money going for years and years and years. And I'm not talking about people who are just shooting the breeze. I'm talking about people who know they have serious problems, are terribly, terribly wounded, having lots and lots of problems, and wasting all their resources trying to resolve what's going on. And then you have the New Age movement, which is also filled with healing techniques. And, you know, again, people are trying every modality, and they're coming away. A lot of them, something is not working. And the therapists are not aware of psychic vampirism, and the psychologists are only barely now starting to get involved with this. And if you're not aware of it, well, the simple fact is you're not going to heal the patient, and the person is not going to get healed. They've got to start understanding that there are these individuals in your life, and they can be causing you tremendous toxicity. If you don't know about it, then you're going to be in a constant state of self-blame, thinking, what's wrong with me? I can't get well. I must be crazy. No, I'm becoming a junkie of these healers. You know, and then you get into all this self-recrimination, and all the time, the answer is around you. It could be the people that you're hanging around with, or the people that are in your life, or even people who have passed on, or people that you maybe don't even know that well doing it to you. There's all sorts of permutations of this. It's not about getting off the hook by saying, oh, yeah, well, you know, this goes on, I don't have to do any homework. So there's a fine line, but this is a legitimate phenomenon that has been studied. You know, and I want to present it in a true, accurate way, not just like for some book that's on a spinner rack somewhere, another New Age self-help jive book that, you know, is getting people off the hook and not telling them the full story.
Once, let's say, one has had an attack, how do we heal after an attack?
Well, again, you know, it's difficult to say because each individual case is different. Basically, the person has to get centered. What they need to really do is get away immediately. The main problem that I've seen in the lack of healing is because you're emotionally corded to the person already. So if you can decord, that means, you know, emotionally just drop that person and or those people and get away.
Cut the cord.
You're pretty much, you're going to be good, you know, and later on you'll come back quickly to your center. Because remember, not everyone is massively attacked. It's not, you know, again, it's one of those situations in which you may have brushed into one and it's pretty easy to recuperate. You know, I deal with extreme circumstances in which people are completely compromised on all levels, materially, you know, sexually, spiritually, emotionally, whatever. And it goes like this, George. When you have an intellectual camaraderie with people, but then for some reason, you know, that kind of breaks down. Say that, you know, you got a bunch of, you know, say you have something in common, like, you know, you believe in vegetarianism, you know, and you're against all the hunters, and you're against the, you know, and you put yourself out there as a kind of an anarchist who's against the system or whatever, and you cluster up and clan up with a bunch of people, and then slowly, you know, you all change and you all differ. You know, it's painful, but it's not that bad to change your intellectual camaraderie. It's like people in a band, you know, who are all playing the same kind of music, but then what do you know? The guy wants to do some kind of different music, and, you know, that feeling of brotherhood breaks. You know, it's painful, but it's not that hard to you know, pull away and detach, take those hooks out of you and go, well, okay, we changed, you know, we moved on. If you have material connections with somebody, like you're in business with them and you're working on this partnership, or you have a, you know, you have a business that's with other people, and again, you know, some sort of breach comes in, you know, it can be painful and it can be wrong, but again, you can recuperate quite quickly. But you see, in life, when you make emotional connections with people, especially on a deep level, when you get corded emotionally, it is a totally different matter. For some reason, maybe because of the primitivism of the human being emotionally, these hooks are very, very deep. You've got to imagine them like, you know, real big, you know, fisherman's hook, you know, something pretty like anchors that go right into your soul.
Very
right
barbed.
Into the vessels, right into the blood, right into the bone. And so, boy, oh boy, trying to take those out again is very, very hard, if not impossible. And then the problem is that even when you've taken them out, the wounds take a long time to heal, even though the hooks may be out. So this is where the situation is, that, you know, when you've realized, it can be too late, because the person who's normally vampirizing you is usually doesn't present themselves as an enemy. That's not the way the vampire works. The enemy, doing that will be no good, because then your defenses are up. They will act like the most charming, wonderful, you know, graceful and brilliant person, et cetera, and then they will make you get courted to them. This is the very severe ones will do this. They will violate your sovereignty. They'll violate your sexual and emotional and spiritual sovereignty. And therefore, you're more likely that you'll be, you know, emotionally courted to these people. And therefore, it's very difficult to make the break, because we project our own virtue on other people, which means that we often, when we meet people, if you're good, you project your own goodness on them, you project your own goodness on the world, and you expect everyone to act and be who you, like you are. And it comes as a mighty big shock when you realize that people are not even remotely like what you are. They're not even remotely like what you think they are, because you have an idea in your head that needs to go. Now, that's very hard for people to swallow, because it goes against the grain, you know, and I call it the Hamlet complex. Hamlet was so pure and so moral, so openly moral, so visibly moral, that number one, he was you know, the victim of tremendous violence from the people around him. And more so, he was in a state of absolute torpor, complete and utter depression and malcontentedness, to even realize that people were immoral. So, you know, this is the question. It has to do with how much light you've got is how much, you know, worse vampirism is going to happen to you. It's a strange paradox.
And again, that's why it's so important to know thyself, because that's your biggest and best defense.
Yeah. Even though that might sound very bizarre to most people, and if you're, you know, if you have a predicament going on in your life, that can seem like the worst kind of advice, you know. In fact, it's the best advice. The whole thing is become initiated because the person did not know themselves.
Yeah.
This is how I got into the subject. You know, I come from the spiritual community, and it was through my, you know, it was through the discoveries of metaphysics and knowing thyself that I came across this pernicious disease, because in my work, it's not so much about finding out how to develop towards the light, I believe that people already have a tremendous instinct for doing that. I always say this in my work. I think that the problem is not that people lack the passion or the motivation or the inclination to go towards the truth. I think that a lot of people have. I think the reason why we're not there is because we're not addressing those forces that keep us from that. We've lost our catabolic thinking. We've lost our deconstructive model, in which you have to remove the violence, the toxicity, and the filth, and the error in order to move forward naturally. What we've done is we've forgotten about that and say, oh no, but I'll just pay this person, or I'll just give this person my allegiance, or I'll just follow this technique or this spiritual path, and that'll help me. But, you know, that's just trying to pull yourself up by the bootstraps. You don't need any of that stuff. You will already automatically move of your own nature towards your own satori, towards your own nirvana, without anybody else's say-so or help. It's just that you're attached. It's the famous old, you know, story of what the Eastern mystics used to say is attachment, attachment, attachment. But what did they really mean by that? You see, and I'm hoping that my work will give the Western people a much better understanding of what it's meant when they say that, you know, you have to let go of your attachment. People have a very vague understanding about what that means. What they're really talking about is emotional attachments, a particular kind of courting, a particular kind of neediness that's very primal and it's very, very deeply inside human beings towards one another. And it's a violation. Now, we might call it relationship, and we might give it the term love, because that's easy to do. It's very easy for somebody to cover their psychic violence in the name relationship. If you're not dealing with a human as a human, but you're dealing with them as a role, because that person is your child, your slave, or your husband, or your mother, you know, these are all roles, and they have no meaning spiritually whatsoever. Most of these relationships are not based on people dealing with another person as a human, respectfully, you know, and responding to their sovereignty and to their spirituality. You never see that. What you see are various forms of violence, various forms of enslavement, under the name of family, you see, under the name of government. Look what's happening right now in America. You know, psychic vampires are all the way up to the White House.
Yeah, and beyond.
And we put them there. You know, I say this in my other work. But the condition is within everybody. You could have a person in your family that's more of a tyrant to you than anybody in Capitol Hill. You've got to deal with the individuals that are psychically, you know, erasing your spiritual quest, holding you back from your light, right in your midst, if you can hope to do anything tomorrow, you know, on a larger scale.
Well, we're going to take our next break here now. I tell you, the time just goes by so quickly. It's just amazing. And when we come back, I want to ask you a question to kind of bring us into the next segment. And the question will be, what's the difference between a creative man and a destructive man?
Okay.
But for now, here is Jethro Tull in War Child. Enjoy.